Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hey, man. Can you hear me loud enough?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you sound great, actually. Can you give him a little more
volume?
More juice.
Maybe it's just another indication of my age. That sucks.
How about that? Is that a lot better?
You're jerking me around, aren't you?
Is that a lot better now, Richard?
It's none of your business now.
Gee, thanks.
Now it's personal.
Okay.
Yeah. Are we on the air or what are we doing?
We're recording right now, as a matter of fact.
Oh, boy. You're in trouble. I've had 3 weeks, almost 3.5 weeks off for the first time in many years from the road, unless I was acting or trying to finish something writing-wise. And I just threw myself. It's hard for me not to do. It's hard to me to shut down my brain because I write all the time, and I have about 30 hours of material, stand-up stuff in my computer, and it's because I just can't turn it down, and luckily I haven't gone insane, literally insane. So I lost myself in some TV series that I was told were, you know, the best, two of the best ever, and then I started Homeland. So I watched all of Breaking Bad except for the last eight.
Oh.
I'm in the fourth season of The Wire, and I'm in the first season of Homeland, and I'm thinking that's how I relax. The Wire, I feel like jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Aren't they just phenomenal series, though, Richard?
So it's, well, Breaking Bad, I mean, they both are two of the, they're different, okay? You know, Breaking Bad is almost like, you know, each one's almost like you're coming out of a great Kubrick film, like, whoa, and you sort of can't move for a while because it's so stunning. And then, on the other hand, The Wire is almost Shakespearean, that effort. I mean, it's unbelievable, and it's so gritty and so realistic, beyond realistic. It is realistic, and it's the acting is great, of course, in both. And the Homeland, I'm only into a couple so far, but I'm already hooked. But, you know, if that makes me relax, it speaks volumes to how my therapist has been.
What I had said to you before, when the you do have enough volume now, right?
Yeah, I have enough volume to, well, yeah, if I didn't have to listen to me, just heard you, it'd be a much better thing for me.
Well, what I had said was, I'm the guy in Minneapolis. Whenever you do an interview on KQRS, I always have to say hello from Bo Caprell to you.
Yeah, I haven't seen Bo in a while, but we hung out a lot, and back in the early days, and when he was in Los Angeles, and clearly one of the funniest cats I've ever known, and I'm sure he still is, and you know, so send my regards if you see him.
I will definitely do.
I still have the restraining order.
And just one other quick thing, I was talking to Gina Gershon.
Another quick thing, and then you just go shopping?
No. I'm just going to turn it back over to you. It's just two people asked me to do this. So the second person, I was talking to Gina Gershon this morning, and she said to please say hello to you.
Oh, yeah, she's something.
She's wonderful. What a wonderful person.
Married. That's all she said?
No. Did you hear that? She wrote a memoir.
Yeah. Oh, she did? Oh, really? Is she promoting a memoir? Oh, cool.
Her the name of her book. You ready for the name of the book, Richard?
How Come I Never Slept with Richard Lewis?
That was a great name. Yeah. The name of the book
is... I was projecting.
Yes, exactly.
What's the name of the book? I'm sorry.
The name of the book is A Memoir, My Life with a Cat, How I Lost My Pussy and Found Love.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that title on...
Interesting.
I don't know. I'm not really savvy. I was Googling something about the debate, and then all of a sudden I saw I lost my pussy in a cat. Way out of my way.
That was part of the
debate. No, I wish. She's, you know, I don't know what kind of. I know she's a sensational actress. I'm sure it's well done. Did she write it on her own?
She said she did. I believe everything she says, so I'd assume she did, yeah.
You don't think, like, Kobe Bryant helped her?
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. I didn't consider that.
I just threw Kobe's name up there as a joke. I mean, you got to understand something. I've been home developing a film and something for the internet. Pretty big stuff, if it happens. And preparing for a six-city tour as stand-up. But since I didn't have to go to the airports and have people frisk me and look at my genitals while asking for an 8x10 for their niece.
Never know what you could be hiding.
I'm sorry, but I just threw myself into these three series, which clearly I understand why everyone, you know, when I tweet about it, at the Richard Lewis, I might add, people, you know, it's a couple of little things. It's just funny to me. And I just started doing this. I don't know what I have about it. I'm closing in on about 100,000 people, and they're all over the world. And some of them, you know, it's fun. Some of them are really funny people. I mean, some of them are, you know, racist and anti-Semite.
Right.
So, but when you talk, you can get, if I get onto a good run, I don't even have a book, my own book that's being pitched, already the proposal's done in now. So I've been keeping myself busy, even though off the road, but mainly relaxing with these three high-powered, great series. And, oh, man, I lost the thread of it because you turned the volume down on me to freak me, didn't you?
No,
we didn't.
No. The people. When you tweet, I started taking it personally because I started looking at some of these celebrity tweets like, hey, I just had a Reuben sandwich. I don't give a crap, you know? And people went, oh, wow, what kind of bread?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
and I understand they love their, you know, their stars, celebrity people. I get it. But I, you know, for what it's worth, I've been doing this 43 years, and yeah, I have fans and everything. But I'm just who I am, and I just happen to go on stage and happen to be a comedian, happen to be on, you know, wherever. But I mean, I never did, and never will, and never wanted to be a celebrity. I just wanted to express myself. So I found that stuff insanely, you know, mundane and dumb and just so ridiculous. So whenever I started doing politics or religious stuff, from the same person who went, hey, I can't wait to see you when you come play here. It was like, you Jew son of a bitch. Anything with religion and anything with politics.
Oh, yeah.
And so then I took it personally, of course, and I went, hey, just woke up and yawned. I had like 3,000 retweets. Richard's yawning. I went, what am I even doing this for?
I know. Isn't it just a bizarre...
I'm trying to figure it out. So now I just philosophize on it and play with him a little bit. But it's not really a great place. I mean, I do politics. Like, if you write essays or you go on, if you want to really, you know, take a stand, which I've always have on when you're doing TV in front of 2, 3, 4 million at a time or shows like this, and fine. But the tweeting is a whole, that social stuff, you know, it's, I got off Facebook fast, you know, it's like, hey, remember I tried to rape your cousin? Can we get 2 comms at your concert?
Oh, Jesus.
I got off that real fast. I'm paranoid to begin with, so this is a mistake. You know, I think I got on these things about a year and a half. But Facebook, I'm off. That to me is scary crap, man. I mean, it might be, it's fun for people. Here's my cat eating my mother's hair. Oh,
you've seen my Facebook page.
I'd rather finish Crime and Punishment than read that crap.
Yeah, I understand.
It's still by the bed since I was 18. It's sort of sad. The pile by my bed now is, how tall is the pyramid in Egypt? Do you have any clue?
1,200 feet.
All right, I'm halfway there. You know, it's really sad when you think about it. You know, assuming you want to read and you want to learn and get smarter, there's a billion books. And I was a voracious reader, but when I started doing stand-up and things were coming out of my head, I really wanted to focus on my perspective on life and stuff. And not that I was going to, you know, find comedy stuff in Dostoevsky that much, but or Hess. But I mean, I started to feel I had less and less time to read. And that's even without a family.
Right.
So, I mean, I was telling Dick Cavett, I can name drop now because I know Brad DeVere. I did a little thing with him, and we're friends with him, and I've done his show a lot. Not the old show, but I was in college then. But I mean, he had cable shows, and we're good friends. And he's quite the intellectual, and, you know, so he used to read everything. And I remember once I told him, I was having lunch with him a couple of days ago in L.A. He was out here doing something, and then he wanted me to do it with him on something, on some little TV deal, I don't know, whatever. So so I did it. But I said, you know, I'll always remember when Norman Mailer was on your show, who, you know, Pulitzer Prize, five fifty novels, whatever, you know, and all sorts of stuff. And Cabot had just seen this this movie that was based on a book about some Japanese cat who committed harikari and some famous guy in Japan. I don't even know what he was, what he did. I mean, I forget. And he asked Mailer, well, did you read this book? And Mailer, like, you know, real gruff, you know how he could have been, for those who don't know, but he was a real tough guy, man, and as brilliant as he was, and had quite the reputation with women and all the rest, good and bad. And so the deal is, he started saying, hey, man, you can't write 40 books and just wake up in the morning and take a shower and then pick up a book about some Japanese guy who commits. I mean, I don't have time. And I started cheering at the set because I was starting to feel like an illiterate, you know, like, wait a minute, I don't have time either. I'm not Norman Mailer, but I was a young comic, but I was starting to feel like I'm going down here. But I just really, I don't know why I'm bringing this up. This is hard. Why don't you edit this out?
No. Actually, I find it quite interesting because Norman Mailer took a lot of chances that nobody else would take. Unfortunately, in one of the instances, someone was killed by a man he got released from prison, if you remember that story.
I vaguely remember that, right.
But the executioner's son.
That night, and I didn't want to watch the news.
Right.
Oh, by the way, Richard, to show you what a bullshit artist I am, the Great Pyramid is 465 feet high. I was just trying to bullshit my way through it. Sorry.
Well, he believed you, so that's all that counts.
You're not taking peyote this morning.
I should be, maybe.
Yeah, well, I did almost every... I didn't... You know, I stayed away from heroin, and... I mean, I've been sober for 18 years now. And plus,
good job.
I mean, I stayed away from junk, smack, and the hallucinogenics, except... I did, on the way to listen to the first Hendrix album at college at Ohio State, someone gave me some opium, and I was really excited. And I was, you know, for about an hour, I was smoking it, thinking I'd be in some kind of dream state, and nothing. My brain was either too evolved for it or too neurotic, and all I was doing was making lists, like, tomorrow, go to the cleaners.
Became normal.
I said, I was visualizing all these opium dens and all these cats stretched out there. I said, this is about as close as I'll get to, that other kind of heroin deal, which I didn't want to.
Right.
That I would overdose. And the hallucinogenic stuff, everybody was tripping. And I didn't. I just thought I would jump off a roof and that'd be the end of it. And but I made up for it with everything else. We don't have to get into this drug stuff. It's a personal journey for everybody. You know?
Right.
If your life becomes out of control over anything, eating, sex, you name it, then you got to like try to moderate. I'll tell you, friends of mine who have problems with cigarettes or food in particular. Food is really a tough addiction.
It is.
Sugar is murderously hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of recovered junkies. You know, hundreds and. They're telling me, you know, stopping sugar and cigarettes is far harder than heroin, you know. And it's true. It's true. I have a friend of mine who's a sex addict, but he's getting old now, so now, he likes to talk about when he was a sex addict. But, you know, I used to say to him, I don't know, this I forget this show, what are expletives, what's the deal here?
You can say whatever
you want.
Whatever the fuck you want.
All right, thank you. That spoke volumes. No, so this guy was in, when he would, I was a womanizer and a skirt chaser, that's like an old phrase, but, and I cheated on practically everyone. You know, I've been married to a wonderful, I met this great Minnesotan.
Yes. Yeah.
Proper adjective. So I've been married for almost 8 years, and I met Joyce about 14 years ago, so I my life has changed a lot, and totally, or had to, you know, I'd lose her. And but this guy... divorced when he was in his 20s, so he was a sex addict, but with one person. It was very interesting to me because I would bounce from bed to bed. That was my deal, and I had to prove myself all the time. But for him, he was just into the act, but with one person. But like for 18 hours a day, you know, it was like, you know, and he had a couple of kids, and I say, how are your kids? Are they running for Senate? Do you have any? You know? It was just like if he was a drug addict or whatever else. I mean, he was just lost into this addiction. But that's a hard addiction. You can't call a guy up and say, listen, Billy, you're coming too much. And he would laugh at me. Well, you're not fucking enough. You know, trust me, I'm fucking plenty. I got a career here. I got to go to Carnegie Hall in 3 weeks. I can't just, you know, I can lay low, you know. I sent my penis to a ranch. I got a massage. In a week, they're UPSing it to me. This guy was so attached to that thing. It's unbelievable. Anyway, you caught me at a cool time, actually. I'm glad. I mean, I heard, you know, it's great. It's great to be with all you folks. And but I mean, it's really odd, man, to be 65, to have gone through all those 15, 20 years of really hard, crazy living with the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And by the way, not something I wrote, but there was a book out a few years ago that if anyone's remotely interested in the world of comedy, I know the film might have been bought already, and I don't know if it'll ever be made, but who knows. But it's called I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's really a great read. It's very sad for me because there's a tormented character in it that's true, that was my first connection in comedy when I was a kid in New York. But it really paints the scene about what it was like before there was, like, you know, a proliferation of, like, you know, 800,000 comedians. And I'm sort of a, you know, I'm sort of a hipster, man, and I'm freedom of speech the whole nine yards. I'm not one of these guys getting older. I mean, I root for everybody. But the truth is, when you have so many comedians, there's so much things are stolen now more than ever, and so much, everything is so derivative.
Oh, yeah.
That it's only that you got to really be discerning to find the gems, and they're out there. But they're, you know, you can get winded when you have to go wade through all, you know. And I'm speaking as a fan of a craft that's basically been at the center of my life, stand-up, and a passion. So, and I love the art form. So, you know, but the truth is, you really have to wade through a lot of this shit because it, you know what I think it is that why I think it's gotten more difficult is that when, you know, in my era, in 71, there really was, by comparison, a needle in a haystack of comedians, like, you know, Leno and Crystal Lee and Freddie Prinze and Kaufman and Lane Boozer. I'm sure there were others, but if you can only think of 15 or 20, you know what I mean? You know, and we only did it, you know, most of us were broke, and we did it only to become comedians. That's it. And it was like us versus the world. Us versus Rickles and Carson and all those stars. And it was, we felt like, you know, like gypsies in a way. Like, what are we thinking? What are we doing? And it was really cool, though. It was, you know, I don't mean to be blow smoke up our asses, but I mean, it's like, you know, we all go out, we listen to each other's stuff, and, you know, we tried to, you know, get on. The goal was then to get on with Carson and, you know, work on your three or four monologues before they came in and saw you, and we'd help each other, and everything is like, you know, and then in the 80s, everything exploded, which was cool. Anyone who can make a living in the arts, I'm all for it, you know. But what happened with that explosion was, and you got a lot of people that, you know, it's like why guys, you know, are taking all these steroids, because it got so competitive, yeah. Anything to give them an edge. And, you know, it's certainly for me, I was ripped off, like, not only my style and my rhythms and minds, but not just me, but other people too.
Right.
Tons of them. But it became that way, you know, anything to get an edge, to get, you know. But the main point I want to make, and I'll shut up on this boredom, is that stand-up, you know, after the 70s, to get a sitcom. I mean, I was already a stand-up 16 years before I got a huge break with a Jamie Lee Curtis show for 4 years. And, you know, so 16, 17 years, I was a road warrior. You know, I had no intention of caring about, you know, getting a series, you know, and that's, I think, a big difference. And I think that, you know, the reason you caught me in a cool time here is that it's sort of an eerie place to be old and to say, wow, you know, I see the, usually it was like, hey, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, man. We just sell this pilot and or blah, blah, blah. Hey, this chick digs me, man. I think, you know, she's going to groove and we're going to groove. And I hope, you know, we're good in bed, blah. That's all. That's the light at the end of the tunnel. But I've been through almost everything that I wanted to try, you know. So now I'm seeing people, you know, like Poltergeist. Come to the light.
Fuck you.
So, you know, I'm trying to do a lot of really important projects for myself, you know, and stay sober and be a better husband. And I even got and I was always petrified of animals. And I know that this last 6 months has turned me around. We got a rescue Maltese mix, this little guy.
Oh, yeah.
Girl. And I'll tell you, man, I've had childhood trauma from animals, from dogs. And I won't go into it, but I've talked about it endlessly on stage because of my mother and how she treated it, and she was afraid to let the dog in the house, and the dog committed suicide. Didn't want the dog to come in. And she, you know, everything was covered in the house, and it was like one big condom. But, you know, the deal is we got this dog that was on the kill list. And, you know, it reminds me of me being an advocate. People saved my life by, you know, helping me. And, you know, and I know, you know, even though I'm so, you know, by nature, addicts are very narcissistic, needy. And I must say that I wouldn't mind a little thank you note from this little dog.
He was on the Green Mile, right?
I mean, she should be dead. I saved her ass. You know, every time she throws up, she's at the vet. It's $210 because she ate a rabbit's ear or something. But I'm putting up with it because I know that if, you know, she might not, she's being treated like a goddess here with Joyce and I. And I love her, but, you know, Joyce is, my wife is the master. Whoever walks her to shit or feeds her is the master.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
her.
Just like a plaything. So I could be, you know, tickling her and playing with her for an hour. As soon as my wife comes home, it's like, I'm jumping off you, Jew boy. I see your wife. If you hold me on your lap, I'm going to bite your ass, motherfucker. It's unbelievable if you're not the master. Bell rings. You know, she leaps off me. I got scars all over me.
Oh, it's like, you do.
But I'm used to it. Now I get it. Now I have no expectations. I give her unconditional love like she actually do. And I really, you're really talking to a guy who really is afraid of dogs, and I still am.
What's her name?
Huh?
What's her name?
Mistake.
Mistake.
Her name is Bella Luna.
Oh!
Yeah, beautiful moon.
Uh-oh. This is a coincidence. We have a rescue dog.
And they call it Central now, but old South Central, where, you know, tough area in L.A.
Yeah.
She was on the streets for 3 years, you know, and she had two litters, and so she was like, you know, probably a prostitute and a drug addict. So now she's, you know, it's hard to go from smack to bananas and cream and cream cheese and bagels.
That's why she throws up.
But she's digging it, you know. I tried to pin a small skull cap on her once during Yom Kippur. I'm not that religious anyway, but Yom Kippur is big for Jews.
It is.
It is.
Is that text you're sending so important that you missed your turn? Is that text you're sending so important that you ran the red light? Is that text you're sending so important you didn't see the ball coming onto the road or the child that followed? Hi, I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. When you take your eyes off the road for even 4 seconds, your vehicle travels 100 yards. That's the entire length of a football field. If you absolutely have to text, you need to pull off the road somewhere safe and do it from there. Texting and driving is against the law and can cause serious injury or even death to you and others. Now that is important. We hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, please contact us.
Find Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Going farther with Mike Bryant on your side, seeking justice for the injured. Bradshaw and Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their six Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Our family, this is a family podcast. My wife, Catherine.
Hi.
Daughter, Alex. And
hello.
Son, Andy, and my nephew, Sean. We do this with Tony Lee. And by the way, Tony, you got to pipe up here because Richard is...
No, I've been talking too much. I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
No, it's because...
I'm in the fourth year of The Wire, and I just saw one before I called you, so I'm all hepped up here.
You know, one thing I will tell you, Richard, is when you're done with The Wire, you're going to be, God damn it, I'm done with The Wire.
I know, and yeah. You know, there's eight more of Breaking Bad, which is blowing my mind. And
that's good.
And now, but you know, people did talk about Homeland, and I started it, and it is pretty cool. But you know, it's going to have to go a long way to be as good as these two. Because wow.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We have a rescue dog. Our daughter and son, Andy and Alex, have a rescue dog.
How big is the dog?
Alex.
She's 10 pounds.
Oh, cool. What is it, a ping pong ball?
Yep. Exactly. No, she's a Yorkie rat terrier mix, and her name is actually Bella as well.
A rat terrier?
Rat terrier. Kind of looks like a Jack Russell terrier, like Wishbone.
I don't even know. I know nothing. So when I heard mix, like, I said, is it possible that some Maltese had sex with it, like a Doberman? Is it?
It is possible.
I was going to say, wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility.
God, it's like this little cute little Marilyn Monroe head on the top of like a camel's body. I don't know anything about anything.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Hey, by the way, can dogs have orgasms when they have sex?
I assume.
I'm guessing.
At least the male dogs.
I guess that because my wife and I had like a 3-year window to have kids, you know, back about 5-6 years ago. So I said, I don't want to be, I would have been, you know, now my age with like a 7-year-old or something. I said, you know, man, ain't going to happen. I have a lot of nephews and nieces. They have like 11 children, 2 great-grandchildren. I mean, my sister has 2 great-grandchildren. So, I mean, I they're my extended family. But I say to my wife, who's really smart, and I'm not an idiot, but I, you know, I'm so focused on certain things and, you know, politics and social issues. And it's not to have, you know, for a kid to say, what's a crayon? What's cloth? I don't know.
Leave me alone.
Why is it raining down and not up? I don't give a shit, number one, Artie.
Artie.
I don't know how you
Artie
do it.
Artie Lewis.
I take my hat off to it and everything, and you hear about, you know, I'm sure there's single parent homes. I'm not talking about it because of the economy and the drug issues and all that stuff. I'm talking about in general. Sure, it'd be great for two parents to. I don't think it's great for parents to stay together if they're not digging each other. And I think the kids get that vibe. And as long as, I mean, the ideal thing is to have an amicable divorce and have a good situation.
Absolutely.
Look, but the deal is, I didn't want to. I don't know how you do it. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm worried about the drain now in my first floor shower, not about Artie's fever or so it's very self, it's not even that it's self-centered, but just by the fact that I never had kids I know so many recovered addicts with families and children, and I go, Jesus Christ, I'm worried about the plumber coming over it too. Really, that is living in a bubble. There's no, not because I'm in Hollywood, because I don't have the responsibility of taking care of children. So, you know, I'm treating this. I'm going to try to teach Bella Luna to speak a few words so I can send it to at least a community college. Shitty community.
That's a good plan. And by the way, I want to slip in a quick thank you to Joyce and her friend Ron Rosenbaum for arranging this whole thing in the first place.
Next, you know, never would have talked to us.
Joyce and Ron, I don't like. So
you don't care.
No, I know. She said something. Yeah. So that's cool. You know, whatever. You know, you can, you know, edit me out and just you guys talk to yourselves and it'll maybe be better.
No. I want to ask you two questions. I do have questions.
Ask me no questions, you know, because I was afraid, you'd be on the spot, you know.
No. I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Anything you want. I'm going to shut up and just answer.
Well, first...
I'm not sure
first of all, this is my personal opinion. I just want your take on it. Yeah, there are hack comedians out there that can get by and whatever and tell 6,000 masturbation jokes and you get so fucking tired of it. But don't you think to be a really good comedian, you have to be very, very bright?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And I've had my share of masturbation jokes, but as long as they were... the premises were intelligent. Like I remember on a Conan show, once I'm masturbating now, but to a higher quality of women.
See,
and it was making a statement about that's how I was a sex addict and that I was it was all weaved into my storytelling. But the truth of the matter is. Do you have to be bright? I'm sure there's a lot of morons, but I hate to throw it just on prop comics. It's hard to not think that there'd be a higher percentage of morons who close the show with a toy poodle, blowing a giraffe poodle, Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody. That's the poodle oral sex joke. Good night.
Bunny, you talk about guys like Greg Giraldo was one of my favorites, unfortunately.
A friend. I did an indie movie with him.
Wonderful.
Everyone tried to help him. It was a tragedy.
It was
brilliant,
a tragedy.
Brilliant, smart guy.
Funny
as all hell.
Did he go to Harvard? I think he graduated from Harvard.
I went to law school with a director friend of mine. I'm not sure if it was Harvard. Was it BU? I don't know. It could have been Harvard. He certainly was smart as hell, man. Wow.
Yeah, and you got Paul Mercurio graduated in a law degree from Georgetown University. I mean, there's so many guys in comedy that brilliant, brilliant minds could have had careers in law or medicine.
Well, Ohio State had a top business school. I wasn't there just feeding cows, you know.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
No, I didn't go to Harvard. I couldn't have. In fact, I tried to get into Boston University, and my SATs were... I just wasn't cut out for those tests, you know.
Yeah.
I just was not. And
I understand.
I got really low boards, but I wanted to go to Boston U. I lived on the East Coast, and I was born in New York, raised in Jersey. And raised gives them a tremendous amount of credit. The bottom line is they wanted to put me in, and I don't know the name of the school, but they said Richard could go to BU, but the first semester, it has to be like, remember in Welcome Back, Cotter, the special class.
Sure,
yeah, right.
It was like the special university for idiots who want to come. I went, this is, where were we going to sit with dunce caps on, and during the game, football games? So I didn't go, and I somehow got into Ohio State, and it had a great business school, and I got in. I don't know how I got in. I don't know if my father was connected to the mob or not, but that doesn't
might have been the case. One never else.
But look, there's a lot of comedians who are really, who I know as friends, who are just brilliant, and there are those who are less so, like me.
That's nonsense. That's not true at all.
Whatever. I mean, the truth is, I don't know. And to be a great look, Steve Martin's, highly regarded, and he was a lot of props, and he was a master at it, you know.
Right.
You know, I just tease like prop guys a lot because I just more into the spoken word and Bruce and Pryor and guys like Hicks and
yeah,
these guys are, you know, the spoken word and really edgy and I have something to say, and I mean, there's so many, and you know, Mort Sahl, and that's all. I mean, Hicks had a tragic, you know, lost him way too soon. But, you know, it's like, you know, that's the kind of humor I just like, you know. But you know, the thing that's so unfortunate is that, and I see this firsthand when I play clubs. You know, if I'm, you know, they'll have an opening act and a feature act, and you know, they're basically paying to see me, but
right.
I don't like to listen to anybody or anything, and I'm very ethical. And in fact, I still have two live, huge concerts of Lenny Bruce that I hadn't listened to since I was in college or started stand up. I don't want to hear him yet. I don't know what I'm waiting for, because I'm just cut too much from that cloth. I mean, I remember, you know, listening to a lot of these albums when I was a teenager, but I would never revisit them. And I don't watch, like, if someone says, like, Eddie Izzard, or Izzard, I don't know how he pronounced his name. I heard about him. I put on the special with my wife for 5 minutes. I went, all right, I'm out. I get it. He's unreal. And, I mean, you can tell real fast.
Right.
And I don't want to hear his head for 60 minutes. I mean, yeah. You can imagine. Take a simple kind of example, cruises, you know, people that do cruises.
Oh, yeah.
If you take any of these specials and I'll take the best 10 minutes of my favorite of Richards and of Eddie's and Ed Murphy and Pryor, and I don't mean to sound grandiose here, but just there's so many of Greg's. Just go on. Again, you're on a cruise to, you know, Vietnam.
That'd be fun.
Miles away from everyone. People are drunk out of their minds generally on cruises anyway, and then they walk off, and then half of them die because the soup had rat poison. I mean, it's sort of sad. I don't know why you'd go on a cruise. Eight people's tongues fell out. It's an investigation. People are babbling. What happened? I'll never go on a cruise. I don't care how old I get.
I understand. Yeah, I was just thinking.
But the point is, they can steal. And the thing is, when I listen to, now sometimes there's some really terrific comics who are starting out, and I hope for that. But I have no control unless I'm doing some concerts in Hollywood. Like, there's a place called Largo Coronet Theater, and it's a great venue. It's small, and everything, you know, Sarah Silverman does it a lot, and Eddie, and everybody. It's a great place for just to do like a concert, but with a small venue.
Are you doing a tour, aren't you?
Denny Sywell, who was a famous drummer, he was with Wings for a long time, and then with Paul, and so many, and a great session guy, and a jazz guy, and he has a Denny Sywell trio. So I said, look, I want to have just jazz open up for me when I play here in Hollywood, at least, because it was my show, so I could control it. But you can't control it when you're on the road a lot, and when I would listen to, by the time, let's say you had, like, Einstein's family was in the audience, if you happened to have the misfortune of having bad comedians, meaning that they're either, you know, stealing material from other people, or just blue and without any sense of premise or any point of view, that audience, for lack of the proper word, is so dumbed down by the time you get on stage. You're you know, I just can't lean back and just even in jest, let's say, do a Walt Whitman poem. You know?
Yeah.
If I had just come out, you know, for some reason I can make that funny and go, you know, I'm in a weird mood tonight, you know, and then just do like a quick little poem and think, and have people get scared that I'm having a breakdown.
Start running away.
Yeah, and, you know, but on an upbeat note scale, I've done this. You know, I have closed for... And they do it out of respect for my, you know, long time in stand-up. Susie, from Curb. Curb tours with JB.
Oh, yeah.
And with Essman. And I know Susie a long time. And they're really strong and funny as hell. And blue is organized, you know.
Yeah.
So if, you know, I've developed some stuff to say following it, because when you hear good night from Susie or JB, you know, it's in front of 2,000 people, or whether it's 1,000, whatever it is, I just can't come out there and go, hey, how are you? You know, I have to... I'm done. It's over.
You brought up Curb.
And that's why I don't do, you know, I have so much respect and I do, for the veterans, you have no idea, and for those who are serving our country. But one of the reasons I don't go on the aircraft carriers, you know, like I'd be like Bob Hopeless. I can't imagine these cats, you know, hearing, I go, hey, I'll tell you, I just came from Passover, you know? I'd be the first USO American on the tour to be assassinated by our own. So I try other ways, you know, personally, to help the brave souls of the lot here for us, you know, in my own way, and whatever, you know, and so I feel like I'm helping, you know, and caring about the soldiers and the vets.
What's a wonder? What's a very?
Well, no, we all, a lot of millions help, you know. But I wish I could perform, but I just know I'm just not the right fit. You know, it's just right. That simple. You know.
No, I understand. I mean, like you being a if you were a prop comic, you'd be a prop comic only if you like had a different colored sport coat.
Babe, if I was a prop comic, I'd be on an aircraft carrier right now.
And a cruise ship.
Honest to God.
Tony Lee, you gotta ask a couple of questions. Tony adores you, Richard.
Oh, very much so.
I want to introduce you to Tony Lee. He's another member of the show. He's a nice...
How many people are there, about?
And he's singling me out because I'm a heeb. That's why.
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of the word heeb.
Tony.
But why should we put ourselves down? We're always on the run anyway.
Tony is a nice...
I was watching the Ten Commandments with my father in Radio City. I was about 5 or something.
Uh-huh.
And Chuck Heston was Moses, you know, the deal, and in the desert 40 years. And I said, Dad, what's going on here, man? What's wrong with these cats?
You're 5.
You know, why are they in the desert for 40 years? This is, you know, they're eating, you know, can't they just go to the, is there a municipal pool or anything? Can't they get a sandwich? And in hushed tones, he says, Jews, we're Jews. And that's what started it. I'm an organized religion person, but, you know, Bob Dylan has this line. I also mentioned this, but it really, you know, the first album, the only album he ever won a Grammy on, or they don't call them albums anymore, but Time Out of Mind in 1997, it's such a spectacular album. It's almost like a dream state, the whole album. I'm glad it won in a big way. I've heard it millions of times from the beginning. It's one of those albums you listen to from the beginning to the end. It's like, you know, Abbey Road kind of deal.
Right.
So, but there's one lyric in there. It's, I was born here. But, you know.
Good one.
I won't sing it like Bob because it'll sound like Popeye. You know. I was born here and I'll die here against my will. So I popped out a Jew. I could have popped out anything. So, you know, you learn who you are when you pop out. And when I learned about the history of the Jews, that was for real. You know, not for Holocaust deniers, but for real people that aren't, you know, sociopaths, you know, and anti-Semites. But I was just, you know, sort of semi-teasing you before, I'm sorry. But
semi-teasing.
Tony's crying in a corner.
But the point I wanted to make was that once I studied about organized religions and this and that and see all the, you know, and how there's really no one really has a clue. And you know, and speak and try to be humorous about it, and also make some sort of points. Nevertheless, the fact that I'm a Jew, I am proud because the Jews have really tolerated. And you know, sure, there's the right and the left, and Israel too. But my God, I mean, that state, which they actually did win, spoils of war in 67.
Right.
You know, I mean, with all due respect, you know, when wars were wars, you know? You know, all right.
Yeah. Won. No, I understand. No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, they won. They won. And, you know, and it started with Jews. And then religions came from that. I'm not talking about Mormons and Scientology, if they call that a religion. You know. You know, listen, I thought Dianetics was a kosher cookbook, I swear to God. I don't know, but it's a religion. So it's like five or six religions. Fine, cool, enjoy it. Whatever gets you through the night, you know, it's beautiful. But, you know, religions have caused, you know, how many, hundreds of millions of deaths and murder and wars and all that, too. So that's why, you know, I'm not a big organized religion, but fan. You know, really not. You know, why should I be? Look, it's caused so much damage and hatred and, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, and pedophilia, and I mean, you name it.
Are you talking about politics or religion?
And death and murder and destruction since the time of the dawn of man. So, you know, I don't know how anyone can be that thrilled about organized religion.
No, I understand, but I mean,
you know, when I'm in Texas, I'm going to be playing Dallas in a couple of weeks, and I have really good shows there, and most of them are right-wing evangelicals.
Right,
and I discuss it on stage, and they laugh. But I don't mock people. I just try to understand it for myself on stage, and hopefully humorously. I mean, my goal is to make people laugh, not to, you know, want to hang me. Beyond,
yeah, so I can understand
that's
that.
It's a good goal.
But I mean, being Jewish is a cultural thing as well. It's not just a religious thing. I mean,
absolutely. And being, you know, or you know, listen, you know, they, people don't like, you know, stereotypes, you know. You know, my Italian friends, my Irish friends, my gay friend, and this Jewish friend. Everybody, you know, it does become sort of like a club. And you know, when people came off the boat, you know, in Ellis Island, man, you know, you better believe they wanted to hang with their brothers and sisters.
Right.
And why not?
No, you're absolutely.
You know, if I came off the boat, you know, and I was a Jew, I wasn't going to like say, you know what, I want to say, is anyone from Australia here?
Well, they spoke the same language.
I'll tell you.
Find out where the leanest corned beef.
You need to know a guy for your auto repairs, legal issues, banking, and more. The same goes for investment advice. You need a guy to help you be successful. Someone you can trust who gets results. Well, I got a guy for you, Josh Arnold. Josh gives you straight talk, not sugar-coated advice about your financial situation. Josh has seen it all when it comes to economic and market conditions, and Josh can make sure that your retirement objectives match your investments. Do yourself a favor and call Josh now for a no-obligation, 48-minute evaluation. You've got nothing to lose, and you'll get a different point of view for your investments. Call Josh at 952-925-5608. That is 952-925-5608. You'll be glad that you did. And tell him his guy, Tom, sent you.
Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a security investment advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice. Tom Bernard is a paid endorser.
I want to tell you a very quick story about... Sure. I grew up in North Minneapolis, which at the time I was growing up, it was there was a neighborhood of Italians, a neighborhood of blacks, and a neighborhood of Jews.
Beautiful.
Right? So that's where I grew up.
Did everybody mostly got along?
Yes, mostly.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. I grew up Roman Catholic, right? So one day, it was basically Plymouth Avenue was where I grew up. And west of Penn Avenue on Plymouth was a Jewish neighborhood. And then east of Penn was a black neighborhood.
Well, this is like The Wire here again.
Yeah, well, that's, I thought you might like this story.
A Wire flashback.
This is kind of like the deal.
I'm sorry.
So in any case, there used to be a drugstore called Desnick Brothers Drugstore. And the old Jewish men in that neighborhood always wore the coats with the black velvet collar and the Homburg hats.
Oh, they were Orthodox Jews.
And they smoked big cigars, right?
Right.
So I'm standing in front of the drugstore, and this old Jewish man comes out, and he's going to light his cigar that he just bought in the drugstore. And he looks down to the east, and there are all these kids, black kids, running, you know, through the traffic, and they're jumping up and down and doing this, that, and the other thing, having a good time, actually. But they shouldn't have been jaywalking, no question about it. But this old man's looking down the street, and this old Jewish guy looks down at me. I'm about probably 6 years old. Looks down, lights a cigar, and goes, "Kid, don't ever act like a schmuck like that," and walks away. And I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Are you blaming Judaism on this?
No, I think it was a good. It was a
no
good,
blame, Richard.
Good
no
advice.
Blame.
It was a good. It was a good moment in my life. Because I thought to myself, man, I shouldn't be a schmuck like that.
Well, it could have come from an Irish guy. Could have come from an Islamic guy too.
Not in my neighborhood.
Well, you know the thing that's so unfortunate, you know, is that you know the bad stereotypes for Jews. You know, there's so many Jews in poverty. Number one, and there's so many, for such a small percentage of the world population have achieved so much and given so much to the world, number two. And also, I mean, just the other day, like Katzenberg and Geffen and Spielberg donated, I believe, $90 million to the Actors' Home and for actors who have no, who are dying and
right. No,
$90 million. All right, so, you know, you weigh that against an occasional Jewish landlord stereotype.
Bullshit. Good point. Really occasional.
What's going on? It's like the political campaigns. You know, a guy will misspeak, and all of a sudden he's this and that. Or, you know,
I know.
It's a lot of crap, man. It's really hard to... You have to really be reasonable and sensible. And I'm not sure how many people are without hanging on for dear life or some meaning. By attaching these stereotypes to other things so they feel that they have some raison d'etre for being on the planet that's in circling around a fucking sun in infinity. And I'm going to have a nervous breakdown just saying. But I mean, I really do feel that that people do, you know, hang on to these stereotypes to give their own version of why they're here some more meaning, and that causes a lot of problems, man.
No.
Look, you know, it's funny. I've gone to a lot of temples. Not a lot, but this year, like for different services for the high holy days here, and went to a very Orthodox, service, and then I went to a very old, really Reformed service with a cantor. I had a banjo.
No chauffeur, a banjo.
The deal is, it was the same message. But it was for Jews who really needed it to hear the reform. They didn't have, and didn't really want to hear like the old school version. And what I got out of that, and I have for the last few years, like if I'm going to hear something, you know, as long as it's not preaching war and kill somebody and kill another, being intolerant of other religions, which I'm not. That's not the message I'm getting when I'm going to temple, at least. Mm-hmm. Is that I'd rather hear allegedly was written way, way, way in the beginning of the religion. I'd rather really read, if it was true, you know, let me read what Moses got from God, as opposed to, a guy, you know, singing a couple of, you know, songs on the banjo. I mean, I don't know.
I
mean,
I understand.
I'd like the real deal.
Richard, you mentioned you're going on tour. Are you coming to Minneapolis, St. Paul?
I hope to come there soon. I haven't been there in a while, man. It's like, you know, one of the high points in my career was around the time I did Carnegie Hall and a lot of the theaters that I wanted to get out of the way, really, and do. I played the Guthrie, not the one now, the old one.
God, I was at that show.
Huh?
I was at that show.
Were you really?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I was feeling great when I left. It was, you know, it's just a minute. You know, I love Minnesota, not just because. My wife's from St. Paul, but there's a weird trip there, man. That people, you know, everyone knows everybody else. It's like
a small town.
I mean, it even gets down. It's surreal. My wife went to this campus when I was 6 years old, and she was in a bunk, and she saw Dylan etched his name out, Zimmerman, on the wall, and they kept it over there. And, you know. It's like everything is very interconnected there. It's very weird, man. She slept with John, and then Tommy slept with Bill. Yeah, but they're divorced now, but their kids are dating. And, I know, he manages, and then Prince, and, you know, and everyone, there's like, you know, then all of a sudden, everyone in Minnesota has 18,000 connections with Prince and his band. And
right.
It's sort of, but in a nice way, mostly, you know. I was telling somebody the other day that, before I met my wife, I was flying on to Minnesota to do a gig, and we were in this little plane. It was in the first class section. It was hotter than hell, and like 8 seats, and pretty empty. But Prince was in the bulkhead on the left, and had a bodyguard next to him, about 300-pound guy, and I was behind him. He's in like a fur coat, man. Apple bird. I mean, It was really hot. I was in a black suit because I was, this is before I got sober too, so it didn't matter to me. But, and I'm there with my thousands of notes, and I met him once or twice. We're not friends, but I know a lot of people that are very close to him, and I admire him greatly. I really do. Mm-hmm. His shows are he's a perfectionist, and he's something. I I figured, and I was already on, done a lot of TV, and was in a series, and I there's no way he didn't know me. Let's put it that way. That was my feeling.
Right.
I was, as I would do, hey, Prince. And then the bodyguard, he doesn't turn around. I go, Jesus, what a shame. And the bodyguard said, Prince knows you're here, but he can't turn around.
Oops, sorry, there's our dog.
Did he wrench his neck? I felt like, did he need some salve or anything? He says, no, he just won't turn around. He's working. I go, well, I am working. I just want to say hello. He says, no. I said, fine. That sounded laughable.
Well, it is laughable.
I wrote him a note. I'm like, Prince, it's Richard Lewis. I'm a foot behind you. I understand you can't turn around. And I said, but I'd love to say, I wanted just to bullshit with you, but, I hope you're well, and I think you're amazing, and blah, blah, blah. So then I get a note. The guy, I give it to the bodyguard, and he gives it to Prince. He reads it. And then he whispers something through the flaps. I don't know. He had his whole head. I don't know. He was all covered up, man. It was just really hilarious to me.
Now, Richard.
Pink or purple or whatever.
Whatever.
The guy says, Prince can't turn around, but he said that after your show tonight, meet him at his club at midnight.
Oh, okay.
I wrote another note. I know you can't. I can't thank you in person. But I'll meet you at your club, but make sure my name's at the door. So I gave it to the bodyguard, and I do my concert. I go to the club. No name.
Oh, Jesus.
So there you have it.
Oh,
what's the moral here?
The moral is fuck them.
If you see a genius dressed like Admiral Byrd, don't show up at the restaurant.
Exactly. Richard, please do come to town. It'd be so great to have you in town again on stage.
Huh?
I said it'd be great to have you on stage in Minneapolis, St. Paul again. You got to get here very, very quickly.
Why? Someone blowing up the city?
No. We miss you. That's all I'm saying. We're missing you.
Yeah. Well, maybe I can, if Prince is there, I'm going to send him a note to meet me after my show.
I'll take care of that.
I'm just teasing the cat, man. He's a genius.
I understand.
Listen, it was really fun talking to all of you.
I just wish next time we could get more than 5 minutes out of you.
When I get a gig there, I'll just, I'll come in studio and we can maybe invite Prince to come down.
We'll do that. And then when you come to town, I assume Joyce will come with you, so I would like...
I'd be too paranoid to have... my entourage is just the voices in my head.
That's it. That's
good, people. Good people.
No, I have people at a distance looking out for me, but or in a very sudden way. But generally speaking, I like to be. I'm a recluse, particularly when I'm performing. I spend hundreds of hours, weeks before a show, looking over endless amounts of new dysfunctions. And every show is different, and I ad lib about 60 or 70% of every show. So it is, when I hear Ladies and Gentlemen Richard Lewis, I'll tell you, man, it's pretty frightening. But
sure.
That's the way I work, and they still want me, so I'm not going to change now.
Thank you very, very much.
It was a pleasure, man. You guys are great. You take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Richard Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. Buy online by going to the Amazon.com banner at TomBernardPodcast.com. They don't charge you a penny more. A small portion of what they sell through our site helps support the show. It's what keeps the show free for our listeners. Click and shop today on the Amazon banner at TomBernardPodcast.com. Holy Christ, was he amazing.
Yeah, he's a treasure. He takes the wheel and he's gone.
Yeah.
Man.
I thought he was going to end after about 10 minutes. He said something was kind of going on there, and then it's like he just kind of hit a different level.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact he lit up Tony for using the word he.
I was really surprised. I feel so bad. I love the guy.
I'm like, oh, no, Tony's in a corner. Rocky's going to cry.
Oh, he lit me up. I wanted to tell some tales. He's so wonderful.
Thanks a lot,
Well, you know what?
Tony.
We'll get him in studio. You'll have to come in studio when he comes to town.
And we had got a 15-minute Jew rant from him.
He got a little defensive. Yeah, why did I say he? But could have said anything else.
Anything else.
It's affectionate.
I think you were trying to be.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I do want to thank Joyce, Richard Lewis's wife, Ron Rosenbaum, whom we all know.
The Rosenbaum.
But Ron worked very hard to get this done. And thank you to Catherine. Catherine worked for about a month and a half to get that done.
That's great.
Many, many
Yay,
emails.
Mom.
Let me tell you.
I honestly, God, didn't think you were going to pull it off.
Yeah, that Richard, was good really moment. One of the highlights of the podcast.
Richard, if you're listening to this ever, you were amazing. Unbelievable. A portion of the profits of the Tom Bernard podcast goes directly to the Smile Network. The Smile Network is a nonprofit organization that provides life-altering reconstructive surgeries and related health care services to impoverished children and young adults in developing countries. The Smile Network, together we are constructing lives one bright smiling face at a time. Thank you very much. Have a great day.